Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.
This is a CBC podcast.
Before we jump into doing more processing work, I want to come back to where we had left off. I heard your enthusiasm at the end of last appointment. Like, yeah. Well, I really, like, it's a fine talking about coronavirus, but I want to get back there.
And that's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm like, great. I'm done talking about coronavirus.
Yes, yes, okay.
I do nothing but stand at the window of my restaurant and talk about it all the time to everyone that comes. They just want to talk about it, right? So.
Okay. Before we do that, just how have you been in general?
I don't know. It's okay.
You're okay?
Yeah. I mean, it's good days and bad days.
I'm Hillary McBride, and this is Other People's Problems. This is a real-life therapy session between me and one of my longtime clients we're calling Andrew. We met Andrew earlier this season. And now we're about to hear a session that gets a little bit more into his past and some of the bigger reasons why he's come to see me. Andrew was sexually abused by a community member who was well-loved. As is the case for some people who experience sexual abuse, it also felt good. There was also something pleasurable about the experience. And so when this is a person who you trust and who other people trust, and it's happening in secret and it feels good, it makes it really hard to know in the moment that it's abuse, even though any of us on the outside looking back would say that is no question sexual abuse. In the moment, for a kid who's going through it, it just feels confusing. It's a lot of things at the same time. There are ways that he's protected himself back then that show up now when he tries to get close to the memories. So in this session, you hear us going back to a point we left off of previously to see if we can get a little bit closer to the stuff that holds so much pain for him.
One of the things that we had left off with was doing some of this work of connecting you with this young part of yourself and even me talking to him. And then I said something like, well, how about when we keep doing this, let's bring in the older part of you where the abuse happened. And you had a few different reactions. I'm not sure how much you remember.
I don't remember.
You remember? Okay.
No.
One of them was, yeah, that would be good. And then the other part was, or the other reaction was, I feel some shame, some embarrassment, like a part of me saying, kind of don't go there with that. And so I'm curious if we think about bringing that part of you into the room right now, what it feels like today, if you notice some things come up, if you notice trying to shove things down.
There's definitely some embarrassment and some shame, for sure. Right now, it feels like I'm trying to grab a slippery pig.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm
what an
just
image.
Like, I'm like, cake, come here. Like, and it's just like, so that feels like it's being elusive. That connection with that of me at that time.
Yeah. Could we think about that as maybe not by accident?
Right.
Maybe even helpful in some way. Especially if there's embarrassment there. Especially if there's shame there. Maybe it's protective in some ways.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. It's kind of like, yeah, come over here and have a picture. Come over here and say hi to you. Grandmother. No. Like, there, he's under the bed, he's here, he's there, whatever, right? Like, so
yeah.
That's sort of what it feels like.
I think his illustration here about the kid taking a photo with the grandma is a relatable experience for most of us, where we perhaps need to do something or are being asked to do something. And there's a part of us inside that says, I don't want to. And we get slippery. We hide behind the couch. And that's kind of what some part inside of him is doing. As I am calling some things into awareness, there is another part of him that's saying, this doesn't feel so good right now. Shame and embarrassment can be toxic to us, but they also serve a purpose in a social context. When I'm helping someone explore what's going on for them, particularly when it has to do with shame, I don't want to come at it with more shame. But we want to think about these responses that we have to our pain as having a function. Shame in particular is there to inhibit for us. It's there to shove something down. It keeps us from bringing up to the surface the things that have vulnerability associated with them. So it is protective. It just also happens to be protective in a way that's erosive and harmful to us.
And can we imagine just for a moment before we connect with younger you, because if that part, the part that's kind of feeling shame or embarrassment doesn't want us to, we're not going to be able to. So we really want to make friends with that part of you that's protective in some ways. And so I'm wondering if you can imagine whether you see it in your mind or it happens on the inside or you imagine it happening here, in some way saying to that part of you, thank you for protecting me.
Yeah, I feel like I'm having trouble connecting in me.
Yeah.
I feel like what I've been doing, or what in some ways meditation has allowed me to do, is sort of protect and defend myself by sticking everything that I actually feel. Like, you know, when the thoughts come up of, oh, I'm not going to be able to pay my rent. Oh, I'm not going to be able to feed my family. Oh, I'm not going to be able to do this or this, you know, or all of these other feelings that my current environment are creating, leaving them here and going to this place up here where I can still function and be. So I think it's sort of a self-protection mechanisms.
Yeah. And then how might that influence or impact what we are trying to do here?
It just makes it inaccessible.
Like being used to tucking it away and going somewhere else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then here we are trying to move towards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Almost feels like that is inside the sort of inner part, and then I'm sort of have moved into the outer part to.
To cope, to survive. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. I don't think that there is anything inherently wrong with that, especially. When things are uncertain, we need to find ways to create spaces in our life where we're not constantly facing the threat or the risk or the danger of the uncertainty.
Right.
And yet we also need to find ways to come back to what we've been tucking away.
Yeah.
So as long as there's room for you to notice what exactly what you just did. I was so impressed with that, where you said, well, I'm really feeling like I'm up cognitively and I've been moving away from what I'm feeling. That awareness is so healthy. And so if we were to think about thinking about connecting with these parts of you that are and have been in the room with us, the part of you, young teenage you, who experienced the abuse, the shame and the embarrassment part of you, and maybe even a part of you that likes to distract you, to keep you away from the other two parts. I'm wondering how it feels to acknowledge those in the room.
A lot of times, I mean, even I think when we started this, and you said go back to a certain time or whatever, and I went back to automatically went back to this time when I was quite young.
Yeah.
I feel like when I try and look back and I try and connect with that part of me, that I'm looking at photographs I've seen of me at a time when I think I was a certain age. Mm. If I was to fully connect directly, it would be from here to here. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like I'm going like this and looking.
Wow.
at a picture of myself, yeah, because that's the only memory that I can feel or...
Mm-hmm. When he's talking about seeing himself, like he's remembering a photo or looking at a photo, what I hear is that he's seeing himself from the outside, not experiencing what it was like to be him at a certain stage of life from the inside. I think about this as a way that he might have cut himself off from himself, that there are some big walls around the inside of him, particularly around a certain stage of life where the abuse happened, not on purpose, right? We can hear in his story that he actually really wants to keep working on this, but these unconscious dissociative or defensive parts keep him away from the feeling associated with that time of his life. He can seem to connect to himself, sort of, when imagining certain stages or picturing a photograph, but he has a really hard time putting himself back in his own shoes at that time.
Yeah, I mean, if I think about little times when I was being abused, then I have to actually go there and be there, and I think there was a certain amount of embarrassment and shame that doesn't make me want to do that publicly.
Yeah, of course. Does publicly mean here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this isn't, you know, this is about as least as public as it gets.
Yeah, but. Yeah. Yeah. So there are these super important parts of you that are saying, don't go there. And maybe sometimes it sounds like you tell me, like, oh, we don't need to go there, or that's not a big deal, or maybe even sometimes sounds like it would be really awful if you did.
But it's funny because I want to go there.
Well, let's just see again. We're talking about all of these parts of you. There is definitely a part of you that wants to go there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's the part that brings you here and you walk in the door. I would even argue it's who you really are, that there is this thing in you that's true to who you are, that wants to connect to all of these fragmented parts of you that got hurt. And there's this other part that's also there at the exact same time that's saying, no.
Yeah.
What I would like to do is be able to talk to the part of you that says, I don't want to go there. And hear that part's concerns. To give it some room to feel some power too, to be acknowledged. If there's a part of you that's blocking you, we don't want to blow past that.
But I've often felt like that. I've often felt like, you know, you have an outside you that you present to the world, and then you have the inside you.
Yeah.
But it feels a lot better for me when an inside part of me can connect to the outside part.
Yeah.
You know?
What happens for you when I say, and I've said it a few times in different ways this morning already, but when I say that part needs to be honored, that's good, it's helped you in some ways, what's it like to think about that in that way?
It doesn't really feel like a strong part of me.
Mm-hmm.
It feels more like a cowardly part of me.
Huh.
Running the other direction.
Right. Lots of fear in it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. And what do parts of us that have fear need?
Reassurance.
Yeah. What would it need reassurance for?
I mean, when I think about the time when I was being abused, you know, it was like a big secret.
Mm.
Like, I didn't want anybody to find out. I don't know. Yeah, it's funny when I try and think about that, my brain just kind of goes,
wow.
It just glazes over, yeah. And suddenly goes off in that direction. I'm like, yeah. Come back here,
right.
Focus on this.
Right, yeah. We have all sorts of like clinical language for that, words like dissociation or like dissociative artifacts, just these parts of your brain that are like, oh, no, we don't go here.
Yeah.
And so whenever we try to go there, they're like, nope, but we're just going to escort you off to the side here.
Yeah.
And so think of that as being a mechanism that, or a part of you that's protected you for so long to say, don't touch the painful parts. It's too scary. It's too overwhelming. Just go over here instead. And I'm so glad that you can notice that. Wow.
But it's funny because it doesn't feel scary or overwhelming because you don't... there's nothing to feel.
Yeah.
It's like saying, you know, what temperature is the something inside the safe? Well, I don't know. Yeah. I can see the safe. I can't feel anything else.
Wow. So. That's a really striking analogy. But. Yeah.
The safe metaphor, gosh, it's so good at describing what our defenses do for us. There is still something there, but what's the temperature of the something in the safe? Perhaps the walls around it keep us from getting close enough so that if we touched it, we wouldn't get burned. At the times when there is something overwhelming happening to us or around us, our stress systems can inhibit the encoding of explicit memories, the kinds of memories that we would recall when we're telling a story about our life. Dissociation can happen on a continuum, from subtle forms all the way to things that require diagnosis and treatment as dissociative disorders. But what I hear him saying here is that he knows that there is a block inside of him. And what we're going to try and do together is help his brain feel safe enough to connect things that were previously disconnected in a way that we can move towards the pain so we can actually start to heal it.
What if someone you love asks you to help them die? What would you say? This is the powerful question at the heart of The Ultimate Choice. The series follows the journey of Michael and his wife Anne as they grapple with his request to choose the way he wants to die. I'm Rob Cribb, and through their story, I learned a lot about my own family. I hope the show is a way to start conversations many of us want to have, but rarely do. The Ultimate Choice is out now.
It seemed like we were getting close to something when you said, and let's just see if we can bring your attention back to this. And it's okay if it takes lots of rounds of leaving, coming back. You really didn't want people to know.
Oh.
And I'm wondering if you can remember what you were afraid of would have happened. If people would have found out.
What was I afraid of? I guess at the time, humiliation, or people would think that I was gay, or it was inappropriate because I knew that it was inappropriate. Mm. But it's interesting because my perspective of those things has changed a lot. Mm-hmm. Being older, just in a different time in the world. I mean, when I was a kid, there was a gay couple that lived down the street that my mom was friends with. But there was a very big stigma about being gay or having any kind of contact with male to male. And I don't think that I have that anymore, or so much anymore. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I was... Yeah, I would have been frightened that people would have thought that or found that out about me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where did you go just there in your mind?
No, I was just thinking... I was thinking that if I felt like I was gay now, would I be so... scared, would I be? And I don't think that I would be.
Yeah. So that element, or that the perspective, that specific perspective around would I be afraid to be identified as gay is different. And yet there's this other piece that we've talked about a few times, which is there was a part of you that was getting something.
Yeah.
And I imagine it would have felt so scary for someone to perceive you as complicit in this in some way, or liking it, or
yeah,
that would have been so scary to have in the hands or minds of someone else.
Yeah, because I didn't feel like a victim mm-hmm. at that time. Mm-hmm. There's still part of me that wonders whether I'm actually a victim now. It's only when I think of how old I was and mm-hmm. when I look at kids that age now and I go, yeah, that wasn't really okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When he's telling me about this, what I'm hearing is a very normal experience, a very normal response from someone who's been through abuse, particularly sexual abuse, and particularly at that point in development. It's so normal for a person to feel confused about it. We have these ideas about abuse, that something abusive will feel abusive, that there will be an inherent quality of wrongness as it's happening, but it doesn't always feel that way for the person going through it. And that's especially true when there is pleasure, there's some sort of grooming, payment, bribery, and this can create a sense of internal confusion for a kid who's getting attention and care from someone who's powerful in the community. But he also had this sense of knowing that it was wrong at the time. One of the things that he doesn't disclose in this session is that when the abuse started to happen, he actually worked really hard to get away from that context. So when all of those mixed messages are held together in an experience that also feels really pleasurable, it's really hard for a person to make sense of how that fits up against the stories we tell about the wrongness of abuse.
So what I find important to note is that as an adult, as you were sitting here today, there are parts of what happened where you can say, wow, for the reasons that I thought of it then, it's not so scary. But there are all of these other things that I can see as an adult, which make me see it in some ways even more clearly.
Yeah.
Can you feel some openness or room within you to connect with that version of you?
Okay.
Seeing this young teenage version of you, and then maybe entering into the scene and introducing yourself to him, telling him that you're him, but all grown up. And ask him if he needs anything from you. And just let me know what he says.
I feel like he said love.
Yeah. And can you imagine how you would express that for him? Could you hold him? Could you affirm him? Go do something with him and spend some quality time together? And if you're able to, can you tell him that you love him, that he is good, that he hasn't done anything wrong here? That it was so not okay for someone else to take advantage of him that way? And that you're sorry, there is so much fear and shame and secrecy around it?
I can feel my mind trying to wiggle away from it
mm-hmm.
a little bit.
So why don't we just name that the part of you that helps you by distracting you is here in this scenario with us in this room. And can you just imagine saying to that distracting part that you'd like it to just give you a little bit of room to do some inner healing work? You can tell it that it's fine to come back later, but you want a little bit of space from it right now. And see that part stepping aside. And then when you're ready, see if you can come back to your teenage self, giving him all of this love that he so desperately wants.
It's funny, because whenever I try and connect with that part of me, sort of I have photographs that I've seen with me at that age, and then I thought about a different part of me, or not a different part of me, but a different image of me at school in my school uniform that I haven't thought about in a long time.
Yeah.
So it was like a little bit suddenly came back into this jigsaw puzzle.
Wow, yeah.
What I hear happening here is that a part of himself is coming back to himself. Where everything previously was blocked out or behind some sort of guarded wall, unconsciously associated with this time in his life, here there are elements of connectedness. What was previously in fragments is now weaving its way together. He's remembering the photos as a way to capture these slivers of his life.
Yeah. What's it like for you to be with him?
Good. Yeah, it feels good. I don't know, it sounds kind of silly, but it feels like I'm sort of reconnecting.
Yeah. I don't think that's silly at all. There have been lots of things in the way between the two of you, and actually getting together and feeling yourselves connecting is an important part of getting to know each other again. I'd like for you to say to him, you know what's happened, that he doesn't have to hide it from you.
Yeah, I sort of feel like if that sort of protective mechanism lowers the walls a little bit, that I do, it's like starting to get a bit of bigger picture of me at that time, and like not just fragments.
Right, yeah, it's filling in. Why don't we begin to close some of these pieces, and if you could imagine saying to this young part of you that we've been getting to know today, that you're so appreciative that he showed up here, and that the connection between the two of you can continue indefinitely, doesn't stop when you leave this room, and then when you're ready, coming back to the room. Really good work.
Feels good to, yeah. It's crazy how my mind works to do things.
It's beautiful to watch, because I can see all of the ways that you protected yourself long ago coming up as we try to get to the hurt that happened long ago, and all of those things happening here in the room, shoving it down, distracting, going over there, right? And then your ability to work with some of those parts and say, give me some room, and then more coming back for you.
Yeah.
It feels so, so, so precious. What happened there?
No, I'm just fascinated by how it works. I'm fascinated by how I'm looking back, trying to connect with this person at a certain time, and I'm using an image, and I'm like, why am I standing by a tree on the sidewalk, like a block and a half from, or half a block from where I live? And I realize that that's where this photograph was taken, and so then I'm like, but there's more, like, and then I'm like, there's more, and then all of a sudden I have like more stuff coming back, like when I was in my school uniform, when I was sitting on the couch in my living room, and so all of a sudden like more bits are coming in.
Yeah.
So whereas before, whenever I'd think consciously about me at that time, this image would come up at that location. But just doing that exercise sort of has expanded.
Wow. I'm so grateful. Yeah. Okay.
It's so important when a person comes in to work on their experience of childhood sexual abuse that they're believed. Especially as you can hear in Andrew's story, sometimes there are memory fragments, or there's some things that line up and others don't. Some blocks of time where there is a lot of rich, detailed memory, and then some blocks of time there is almost none. It's important for a person to know that I don't need to know all the information to know that I can help them. There can often be so much shame for men in coming forward about their experiences of childhood sexual abuse or any kind of sexual assault or sexual abuse. Men are already having to do the hard work of swimming upstream against these restrictive narratives within masculinity just to get into a therapist's office, just to be able to share vulnerably with another person. And the experiences that they carry with them can come with so much shame. So there can be this barrier that they have to overcome, just to name it, in addition to feeling the weight and the pain of everything they're carrying inside because of what happened. I'm Hillary McBride. Other People's Problems is produced by Jody Martinson, mixed by Will Howie. TK Matunda is our associate producer. Tanya Springer is our senior producer. RF Nirani is the executive producer of CBC Podcasts.
For more CBC Podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.